Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello and welcome to The Price of Football, the show that looks at the money behind the beautiful game and is still reeling from the financial consequences of possibly the dullest FA Cup third round draw ever, with one exception, which we'll probably get on to talking about. I'm Kevin Day. He is Liverpool University's Kieran Maguire. How are you, Kieran?
I'm very good, thank you, comrade.
Yes, it was a shocking draw. Although, as Millwall's ball came out, Ed just went, "It's going to be us, isn't it? It's going to be Palace." And he then said, "Look, you can see David Seaman's looking round. They've clearly warmed the ball. The Palace trying to feel for it." I knew it's just. I can't, you're the same. It's just not a year goes by that we're drawn away to a Championship team in the FA Cup third round. And of course, people will say, well, thank you, lucky stars, you're in the Premier League and you can moan about being drawn away to a Championship team. But I wanted Harrogate at home. I wanted someone we could beat 3-0. That's Arsenal's 8-0. West Brom is always a good day out, though.
It is. Yeah, Battle of the Albions and all that nonsense. Yes, it'll be great. And you say, it's a great day out.
Yeah, we were discussing this morning because it's not quite the same. The Millwall Palace game hasn't got quite the same freestyle. Now we've upset Rod Liddell, you know, chief Millwall hooli. It might have a bit more interest. But we were trying to work out the most dangerous route today before starting the Wetherspoons at London Bridge and then see what happens there. That would probably be the most dangerous place to start, but it'll be fine. It'll be fine, Kieran. Later in the show, we will hear from the chairman of Lewis FC's men's team, Stuart Fuller. Kieran went down to talk to him. It was decided, probably for the best, that a Sussex loving like that didn't need a sneery little Croydon boy dropping comments in about muesli and wreath-making things. There's a lot of interest in the wreath-making. People misunderstood. I had to explain to some people that the Baroness was making Christmas wreaths. She wasn't on the edge of killing you, Kieran.
Well, she probably was, but yes,
possibly. But before that really, really interesting interview, and it's very interesting to hear the thoughts on the Tracy Crouch fan-led review from the chairman of a club at that level. We do have some news, which is handy, Kieran, because it's a news day. And first of all, this first story, Kieran, has a word in it that is going to upset certain Premier League chairman, even though it's got nothing to do with the Premier League. It's got the word independent in it, which is really not going to go down well. The EFL is going to create an independent financial unit in an effort to stop clubs breaking financial fair play rules. The first question, Kieran, is this a result of the Tracy Crouch review? And if so, why has it taken so long? Because for the love of God, one of the things you've been talking about for 2 years is something like this with some teeth that can stop clubs doing these things that are wrong.
Yes. It's an amazing coincidence that it's come out so shortly after Tracy's report. But my understanding is that the bigwigs at the EFL have been pushing for this. And I think their view will be that being seen to be taking the finances of EFL clubs more seriously will assist them when, first of all, Tracy Crouch's report presumably goes to Nardine Dorries and then goes before Parliament. And then secondly, assuming that there is an independent regulator appointed, because if one isn't, it will look a bit daft. They can say, look at us, you know, we're the good guys. You know, we are trying to take into consideration the sustainability of our clubs, although the critics and the Premier League will say, well, hold on, you know, the average salary in the championships, 800 grand a year, and if your solution to that is to be given more money, are you necessarily addressing the problem? But also in the articles that I have seen, there has now been talk about introducing some form of wage control into the championship. And this has always been a bit of a bugbear. And it's actually a bigger problem than perhaps people realise, in the sense that you've got some clubs coming down from the Premier League with people on Premier League contracts. Yes, they'll have some relegation clauses, but it's difficult to drive those really down. And you've got other clubs that are effectively yo-yoing between the Championship and League One and play and paying wages, you know, 10-20% of those of the top clubs. So it's a funny league, the Championship, but it looks as if the board of the EFL are keen to have some form of wage control. The problem they've got, It's got to be approved by the club owners, because it's done on a democratic basis. Attempts to have wage control this season were, or last season were rejected. It didn't even get as far as a vote. And if you recall, when we had Nick DiMarco on the show last season, the wage caps for League One and League Two, which were imposed. Those were actually rejected through a legal claim because it had they hadn't brought the PFA on board. So it's a tricky one, but there's a job going, by the way. If there's anybody listening, I believe the odd accountant does listen to this show, to be head of that independent financial unit. It's paying 85 to 95k, based in Preston. 18-month contract, you'll be responsible for checking the numbers, checking the creative accounting, although when I wrote to the EFL about the creative accounting, they threw my email in the waste paper basket. Owners and directors tests and things like that.
All accountants are odd, Kieran.
Yes, that is true. Apart from the ones that are even.
The ones that listen to this are even more odd. Obviously, our listeners will be assuming that I will ask you this question, Kieran. Has anyone been sidled up to you? Have you had a headhunter come up and say, look, this whole process, you know, we've, the EFL have pretended to be slightly upset about some of the things you said, but really that's a kind of flirting thing that's been going on in that kind of way that you pretend as a 14-year-old not to like that girl around the corner. Is this what's going on? Will you have time to still do the pod, Kieran, when you're heading up this independent financial unit?
As I am in the those that can do and those that can't teach category of employee, according to many, I don't think I'll be the right person for the job.
So, Kieran, do you know how far the remit of this independent financial unit will extend? Is it only going to be with financial fair play matters, wage control matters, or, for example, if the hostile takeover of Rochdale was still in process, would this be the sort of unit that would be asking questions of those people who wanted to take over Rochdale about their intentions, or is it solely limited to financial? Have you got the cash? Can you pay this?
I think it will be linked to governance issues as well, in terms of application of the rules for the owners and directors test. Though for that, if I'm honest, you need somebody from a legal background as much as from a finance background.
And there's always this issue with the word independent, because, of course, what you need is somebody who knows football. But the chances are, if somebody who knows football gets the job, they will be linked to a club, which will make things difficult for them when it comes to making independent judgments. And if you get somebody who's completely outside the game, that will make things difficult for them as well, won't it?
Yes. There are plenty of people that work in the world of finance that have a genuine affection for football. So an outsider, there's not a huge amount to learn in terms of the finances of football compared to the finances of other industries. You know, the core issues are a constant. So I don't think it should take anybody too long to acquaint themselves. And clearly, you know, there will be a settling in period. You know, the downside, the bit I can't understand, you know, it says it's an 18-month contract. Mm. You know, why? You know, if I was going for a job, I'd be looking for a permanent contract, especially if it meant uprooting family and moving to somewhere in Lancashire, so you're close to the offices. In terms of the salary, I'll be honest, the salary is okay. I think they're looking for somebody who's been qualified as an accountant for around about 5 years. The Institute of Chartered Accountants would say that the average salary for somebody at that level is probably in the region of 110 to 120. So this is slightly less, but football does play slightly less. And also, those figures include people living in London and the southeast, where there's a premium on wages anyway.
Mm. So does the length of the contract, 18 months, imply that it's a stopgap and that there's something else coming on? Or is it just it's a new job, we'll see what happens? Because as you say, I know there will be a lot of people listening to this going, that's a big salary. But in terms of the people that are already working as execs in football, it isn't a big salary. As you say, you're not attracting the big hitters with that level of salary, are you? And if they're saying, you know, 5 years experience is all you need, that doesn't imply that they're taking it seriously as a position.
I'm not so certain, because if you're 5 years qualified, then you'll have done 3 years training to be an accountant. So you're going to be in your 30s. At that level of remuneration, perhaps you would be looking for something to put on your CV anyway to move on to another role. But it's a bit of a weird one. You don't have to know a huge amount to be good at this job. You've just got to be good at the core elements. In my opinion, I look at, I'm a dweeb. We both know that, but. You know, it doesn't take me that long to go through a set of accounts and work out what gets my eyebrows raising, and then you're just putting numbers into a spreadsheet again. It's not a hugely difficult task. It's just time consuming. So I think for somebody that loves the sport, that wants to get their toe in the water, this could be a gateway job as well. After the 18 months, because then you've got it on your CV. You would have had experience of dealing with up to 72 EFL clubs during that period of time, the world of finance is like many other industries. It's all about relationships and proving yourself, and then people will come looking for you.
Yeah, one final comment, Kieran, just to save 60,000 plus listeners saying it for themselves. I'm fully aware that you don't have to know a lot to do this job. Applies to me as well. I could just hear people go, that's just like Kevin. Portuguese champion Sporting Lisbon are one of eight clubs sanctioned by UEFA for financial fair play breaches. It's been quite interesting to learn, Kieran. I wasn't fully aware. I was sort of, ironically referring back to the comment I made at the end of the last question. The difference between UEFA FFP and the Premier League and FFP has been an interesting one to learn. So why have these clubs been sanctioned?
Right. There's FFP, which is one issue in terms of have you managed to stay within certain limits in respect of your losses. But what UEFA are very hot on, and I think this is quite commendable, is the transfer market. If anybody has ever exported their services, if you've worked overseas and then the promoter, the college, whatever it's going to be, if they don't pay you, things are really awkward. I had to write off a huge amount of money when I was teaching in the Caribbean, and that really hacked me off. But I tried lawyers, I tried debt collectors, and I got absolutely nowhere. Moving, trying to transact between country and country can be difficult. And this is where UEFA is actually very good, because it keeps a register of transactions between clubs in terms of player transfers. It knows the amounts which are due and on the due dates. And if we take a look at all of these clubs that have been sanctioned by UEFA, so we've got Sporting, we've got Porto, CFR Cluj of Austria, CSK Sofia, Real Betis, and there's a few other clubs as well. They've all been sanctioned for not paying instalments on transfers, right? And this is officially called no overdue payables. And this is they've got their own little version of what the EFL are proposing. But this is the absolutely grandly named First Chamber of Club Financial Control Body, which appears to be a series of random words.
That's a bit Hogwarts, isn't it?
It could be. Mm. So Sporting have been given a €250,000 fine. Porto have been given a €300,000 fine. And what they've said is that if the payments and the fines are not made by the 31st of January 2022, then they're going to ratchet up those sanctions with up to a 3-year ban from European football. Ooh, and yeah, that is teeth.
Mm.
So it does seem that UEFA have really decided to go for it, to not allow clubs to swing the lead in terms of not paying people. And that's got to be encouraged. The threat of not being able to play, for a club like Porto and Sporting, they normally get into the group stages of the Champions League, which can be worth up to 20-30 million pounds in a season. I did try to get my uncle Terry to get in contact with some of the people of UEFA, because if the clubs involved are having problems collecting the money, he could come in useful for them.
Do we know the amounts of money involved? Do we know how much is owed by these clubs?
There's nothing in the UEFA report, and I think some of the payments have actually now been made. I think Besiktas, they had some issues which have now been resolved. So it seems to be working, the system.
This system interests me, Kieran. I missed a little bit of it because I turned the microphone down as I was about to cough. Apologies for the cough. I've got a bit of a sarcoid issue again. And also, I'd be interested to see whether people moan more about me coughing or Finley barking. Because apparently Finley barking is hilarious, but me occasionally coughing in the background is really distracting. So what? Say Sporting Lisbon have bought a Palace player, and 2 years down the line, they haven't paid the money. Does the system work because Palace will say to UEFA, they haven't paid us? Or does UEFA system automatically flag up that these payments haven't been made? So UEFA have got a giant spreadsheet, of which, of course, you would approve. And this spreadsheet will a little red flag will appear on somebody's computer in Switzerland and say, well, hang on, Sporting Lisbon haven't paid that next instalment.
No, what would happen, there would have to be a complainant club, because otherwise UEFA would have to have access to the bank accounts of every single club in European football.
Yeah.
And I can't see that going down too well, especially in Switzerland, of course,
where
the last thing they want to do is to let anybody know what's happening to their bank accounts.
Yeah, they're against that sort of thing, aren't they, in general? For historical reasons. Yeovil Town are just one of many clubs I would like to have had in the third round draw yesterday rather than Millwall. Now, their supporters' trust has called for all parties involved in the talks about a takeover of the club to tell supporters what's going on.
Yes, this is another classic breakdown of relationships. For the last couple of years, since 2019, Yeovil Town have been owned by a guy called Scott Priestnell, who, by his own admission, is not a Yeovil Town fan. Mm. He's just a lover of football. We've heard that before, haven't we?
We have.
And he said that he wants a legacy project at Yeovil. He wants to walk away from the club at some point where, you know, the club has moved on to a higher level. And I can remember Yeovil playing in the Championship within the last decade. So they have had a sad fall. They've come from non-league. They've been very successful initially in the EFL, and then things turned against them again. What's happened at Yeovil is that they didn't have a particularly great season last year in the National League, and the Glovers Trust, which is the Yeovil Town Supporters organisation, it thinks that there have been talks with regards to the sale of the club. Mr. Priestnell says that there aren't any such talks. He's had a bit of a grumble because he thinks that some of the Yeovil fan groups are boycotting the matches, and that's affecting the club financially because attendances have dropped. And Yeovil, by National League standards, get decent crowds. They're getting around about 3,000 at one stage, and that's dropped by around about a third. You know, what we need to do is to get people around the table or around a Zoom and just have an honest conversation. You know, and I've had a few messages from people at the Glovers Trust. And in fact, perhaps we'll try and get them on the show as well for them to put across their perspective. They're concerned that there might be an attempt to sell Huish Park or Huish Park. My pronunciation is appalling, but fortunately, from their perspective, it is categorised as an ACV, an asset of community value, and I think they've exercised their options there to make it more difficult for the stadium to be sold. It's a club with fantastic history. You know, Somerset is a fantastic place to go to. If anybody's ever been there, you know, it's been there for 125 years. It's had managers like Ron Saunders, Malcolm Allison, Graham Roberts. There's a lot going on, but I think there needs to be a bit more transparency. You know, perhaps if fans were allowed to appoint a shadow board. Or is that too communist? I also dug into some of the companies owned by Mr. Priestnell, including one called CV Leisure Limited, which is, I think it's got its offices at Yeovil's ground, and in its accounts in 2019. It showed £10 worth of net assets or £10 worth of cash, which is fine. And then a year later, it published accounts and then it republished them. This is a company which has just been going for over a year. And it says, we've got accounting errors of £4.5 million. And to me, that's quite staggering. Again, transparency, communication, governance, trust. These are all words which, you know, sadly we say too often. I think those issues have to be addressed by the parties so that Yeovil Town can go forwards.
Sorry, Kieran, can I just pick you up on that? As you know, I'm a bearer of small brain. You say £4 million error.
Yes, it was bizarre. And they had this long convoluted list of balances going up, down and sideways. The overall impact was to adjust profits by £4.5 million. So all I can say, it's strange. And once people start to look at things like that, we've had similar issues with Oldham. They restated their accounts. No surprise that there's a poor relationship between Oldham Athletic and the fan base. I think the owner needs to work out how he's going to communicate with the fan base. Yeah, everybody benefits from Yeovil Town being successful. So Scott Priestnell, I think he's written an open letter. I don't like open letters.
No.
They're not normally particularly open. They tend to be agenda driven. Communication and look, you know, talking people face to face can resolve an awful lot of aggravation. And it doesn't even matter which language you're using, because there's ways of communicating using different languages.
Amazingly so, as we've discovered. And hark at you talking about a shadow board. You've been reading that Communist Manifesto fan-led review by the Tory MP again, haven't you?
That's right.
Yes, if anybody from Yeovil Town Supporters Trust does want to get in touch with us, we'll be only too happy to talk to you. And for those of you listening around the world with an interest in English football, check out the history of Yeovil Town, because back in the 40s and 50s, they were one of the most amazing clubs you could get, the giant killers of all giant killers. Now, Kieran, as we speak, it's half time in the game between Portsmouth and Sheffield Wednesday in League One. And there are about 2,500 Sheffield Wednesday fans there. Both teams, Portsmouth and Sheffield Wednesday, remarkably big fan bases and have retained those fan bases even during the bad times. Sheffield Wednesday Football Club have started selling early bird season tickets for next season this week. And I know from looking at social media that there are a few cynics out there who have their doubts about the reasoning behind this.
Yes. I think fans are familiar with the concept of renewing your season ticket early, getting a bit of a discount, and you feel good because your club has benefited. You can budget for it as well, not because you normally know when these things are coming out. What's happened at Sheffield Wednesday is that this took fans completely by surprise. And offering...
Possibly, Kieran, because it's December of the
exactly.
season. Yeah.
We've all had to tighten belts. We've got fuel prices going up, transport prices going up. Christmas is coming along. That's a big financial commitment for many families and so on. And for Sheffield Wednesday to say, and it could be that they're trying to market this as some form of Christmas present for somebody in the family, in which case, fair play to them. But if you buy your 2023 season ticket now, you'll get an extra 30 or 40 quid off the price. But it's happening nowhere else. And you said that there's been a cynical perspective. Sheffield Wednesday, they were subject to a points deduction, which is why they're now in League One, and that's costing them around about £6 million in terms of TV revenue. There have been issues with their accounts historically, which have been a bit confusing. They also, last year, introduced a 10-year season ticket. If you're doing that sounds like you're pretty desperate for cash. And I spoke to somebody I know in Sheffield, who said the word on the street, and that means that a rumour is not gospel, was that they sold four of these 10-year season tickets, of which two went to people with the surname Chancery, which just happens to coincide with the surname of the club owner. That could be just tittle tattle for all I know, but it does show that why is the club in such an urgent need for cash and cash flow? I don't think they'd sell a huge number of them. And then when you look a bit more deeply, if you do get your discount, you don't have to go and pay for it all immediately. But you're not getting interest-free credit either. Some clubs are spreading the cost of a season ticket over 10 months and they're doing it interest-free. And I think that's a fantastic approach. Here, you're having to get the money up front. And the payment scheme, I think the interest rate is around about 6.5%. Substantially less than a credit card, to be fair. But even so, you're gaining with one hand in the form of getting a discount, but you're losing with another, because if you're doing it on an instalment basis, you're having to pay interest on that.
But also, you could understand a little more if it was February or March and Sheffield Wednesday were eighth, possibly got a chance to get in the playoffs, possibly your season ticket could be seeing you watch football in the Championship. You'd say that's a risk you would take. But at this stage of the game, they've still got a transfer embargo. They still don't know which division they're playing in next season. The likelihood is it will still be League One. So it's a big ask, isn't it, to want fans to buy a season ticket for next season with so many uncertainties going on.
Yep, I agree entirely. And you know, if I was a Wednesday fan, I'd probably sit on it for a while. You know, why commit yourself? And remember, if you've got a family, they're going to take priority anyway.
You'd like to think so. I know a couple of Palace fans who would have to be persuaded that the family should come before the club. You mentioned Oldham Athletic and their relationship with fans earlier. The club have started legal proceedings against their landlords to try and get ownership of the North Stand at Boundary Park. And there may well be new listeners to the pod wondering why a football club doesn't have ownership of the North Stand at their own football ground in the first place.
Yes. The more you read about what's been going on at Oldham Athletic in terms of the present owner, Andrea Lemsagam, the prior owner, a guy called Simon Blitz, who owns something called Brass Bank, which appears to have some relationship with the North Stand. The more confused you go, and then you throw into the fact that the local council at one point was going to help fund a ground move for Oldham and take over Boundary Park, but that failed. They couldn't find somewhere. I think they're looking for somewhere in Failsworth in Manchester. The North Stand appears to be owned by Brass Bank, but clearly it's an issue because Lemsagam and Blitz don't like each other, or don't appear to like each other. The North Stand was then shut by the Safety Advisory Group. I think it has subsequently been reopened. And the poor Oldham fans, they just want to, same as us, they just want to go and watch football, go along and cheer their team, have a few beers with their mates, and relax. And with all of this taking place, and the allegations made by Mr. Lemsagam about you know what he inherited in terms of the club, he's reported people to the police on the back of this. It all seems to be very messy, and then you look at the number of managers that Oldham Athletic have got through under Mr. Lemsagam's ownership, and you go, well, this does not appear to be a club which has a strategy, and you know that they are suffering as a result of it. You know, again, you know, We keep on going on you know, we're a couple of old blokes, but we remember Oldham getting to the FA Cup semi-final. We remember Oldham in the Premier League. You know, Andy Ritchie, Frankie Bunn, they were a cracking team to watch, and it's a real tragedy that you know they are now where they are at the wrong end of League Two.
Absolutely. A very old friend of mine is an Oldham fan, and he will have a wry smile at the fact that he used the word relax about going to see Oldham. in the same neck of the woods, mystery. It says here, I like every now and again. You think Guy's just read a James Bond novel, producer Guy, because occasionally he will frame a question in a really kind of spy sort of way, and this is for no apparent reason. And it says here, mystery continues to surround Manchester United's global betting partner. Unfortunately, the mystery isn't why Manchester United need a global betting partner in the first place.
Yes, you're absolutely right. This is a company called HTH, which United signed a deal with about 8 months ago. Now, if you're going to be involved in global betting, you know, people these days don't pop along to the bookies all the time. They use apps. They use the internet. After 8 months, the website's still not working.
Oh.
It's effectively just got a placeholder and little else. And the reason for this is that it would appear that HTH are what's referred to as a white label sponsor, where they're not actually interested in getting money from UK punters. They're targeting other markets, normally the Asian markets. So they will have a nominal UK-based website, but in reality, they're trying to get their names across to punters in other areas. And their white label is run by a company called TGP Europe, which has around about 15 betting platforms. TGP Europe is based in the tax haven known as the Isle of Man. So, it all starts to get a little bit uncomfortable. Why can't it be based in Manchester? When people defend the Glazers, I always say, why is Manchester United registered in the Cayman Islands? Because that's that's, you know, I've caught the number 42 bus from the central of Manchester, and you know, Cayman Islands is a fair way away from that. Now, it would appear that this company, TGP Europe, does have the wherewithal to satisfy the Gambling Commission and to pass its tests, whereas it could be questioned that HTH might struggle to do so. So it's effectively using TGP Europe as a flag of convenience. But we're talking about Manchester United. We're talking about, you know, it doesn't matter what football club you support. If you go anywhere in the world, and you know, and I do, you know, and I say I'm from Manchester, or, you know, I've lived in Manchester most of my life, they go, oh, you know, Manchester United, and then I explain that I'm not a Manchester United fan, and they get very, very confused when I tell them who I do support. But Manchester United has a reputation. And you know, if you look at the website, it talks about the legacy of Sir Matt Busby, Sir Alex Ferguson, and all of the good things associated with the club. And it has done many, many good things. You know, it's easy to slag United off, and at times I can assure you that I'm one of those people. Mm. But Manchester United has many good people working for it. This looks a bit sordid. This looks like it's another one of those cases, and we're seeing too many of them, whereby somebody comes along, says, here's a check, the club does relatively little due diligence, or just banks the check and doesn't worry about it. We've seen it with Manchester City recently. We've seen it with Barcelona. We're now seeing it, you know, with Manchester United. It just doesn't look great. And the club, when approached by journalists, sort of goes a little bit coy and gives a, you know, a very, very neutral response. So, you know, the gambling industry needs to prove that it's running itself correctly and with a degree of integrity, and things like this really don't help it.
Yeah, just as a matter of interest, I might go onto the Manchester Metro travel website and put in Old Trafford to Cayman Islands to see how many changes it yes. takes. There's probably a Smith song somewhere that involves a tram stopping at the Cayman Islands. And this concept of the white label, Kieran, is this a clearly it's legal, as producer guy would like us to point out, but is this a common phenomenon in the accounting world?
It's a common phenomenon in the business world of gambling companies. You see many of them nominally located Gibraltar, Malta, Isle of Man, places which have a light touch when it comes to regulation and governance. And you then follow the crumb trail, which tends to then go to places in Asia. Because, you know, gambling is a very enthusiastically followed pastime in many places in Asia.
And just to follow up on comments you made, Kieran, whatever you think about Manchester United, and around about 4 o'clock on Sunday afternoon, it wasn't a lot as far as I was concerned. They are one of the biggest clubs in the world with one of the greatest football traditions. And sometimes it irks me. George Best is my idol, is my favourite football player. You can't love football without being aware of the history of that club and the tragedy of that club. And it irks me that the Glazers don't really seem to realise how important that history is that they're supposed to be safeguarding. And like you say, every single little thing like this just chips away at the aura surrounding that club. And you know, I've got no love for Man United. I've got no love for any club other than Crystal Palace. But they're an important club in English football history and in European football history and in world football history. And they should be better looked after than they are by the people that are currently in charge there. And talking of big clubs, Real Madrid, Barcelona and Athletic Bilbao have reportedly put forward an alternative funding proposal to Spanish football clubs in a last-ditch bid to scupper La Liga's multi-billion-dollar deal with CVC. Can we start by explaining to me who CVC are?
Yeah, CVC are a private equity company, and you know, private equity is not an industry noted for its benevolence. It's caring about people. It just cares about the bottom line. So Spanish football has a financial crisis, which it was trying to address through its cost control measures. Spanish football was hit pretty hard by COVID. And what the people in charge of La Liga did was that they went to this private equity company who said, we will give you around about €2.5 billion and you don't have to repay us anything, but we want 10% of your broadcast revenues for the next 50 years.
Now, 50 years.
50 years. 5-0. Wow. Full Hawaii. Absolutely. Wow. So, yeah, you do your sums. You think, well, that doesn't look, you know, that appears to me to be quite a high interest rate on an annual basis. You know, I got my spreadsheet out, as you can imagine. So Barcelona and Real Madrid were very hostile to this, but they could be outvoted by the other clubs. And if you know, you have to go, it's collective responsibility in terms of if the majority or the vast majority vote for something, then everybody has to go along with it. It's now come to light that Barcelona and Real and Bilbao, they have been in talk with some banks. I think it's JP Morgan, with regards to, instead of getting $2 billion and giving 10% of your broadcast revenues, instead they're going to borrow $2 billion and they're going to pay back to the bank €115 million a year. So, you know, and that's going to be for 25 years. So it's only half the period. Why they want to do that? They say that they feel that there is a lot of growth potential in La Liga TV rights, and given that Barcelona and Real Madrid are the dominant clubs, you can see why they would be most reluctant to go along the CVC route. The La Liga are there's not a lot of love between those two big clubs and La Liga. It's going to a vote next week. La Liga are saying, if this alternative goes through, then all of a sudden you've got a load of debt on your balance sheet, and therefore Barcelona are likely to fail the cost control measures, and they aren't going to be able to sign any players. So there's a lot of politics, a lot of finger pointing, Tebas at La Liga and Perez at Real Madrid, they just don't like each other. This is a proxy war taking place through the world of finance.
One more news story, Kieran, before your interview, I should say. I've never been to Denmark. I thought I was going once. It turned out I was going to Norway because the friend who was booking that particular away trip confused the capital of Norway with the capital of Denmark. But never mind, long story. But once all this COVID shenanigans is over and I start travelling again, I will go to Denmark because it's a country I like the look of. I like the cut of their jib. And this last news story only adds to the likingness of the cutness of their jibness. The Danish Club Federation is suing the European Super League over their use of the name Super League.
Absolutely brilliant.
That just sounds to me like the best. You hear these words like, if only there was some kind of translation site, Kieran, that we had that could translate some of these Scandinavian words like hygge. But you hear these words, and yeah, they're clearly Scandinavians are a cool people. And this just made me chuckle. This is, I love this story.
Yes, this is the Danish Superliga, which has been going since, I think, it's either 2009 or 2011. They say, hold on, European Super League, you know, you've gone and registered a load of websites. You're remember, according to Real Madrid, Barcelona and Juve, it's still in existence. You're trying to pretend to be us.
Mm.
But as we've already established, they're not, because the Danes are cool and Perez isn't. But they've gone through the courts. They're looking for a form of financial settlement that, if you want to go ahead, and when you sort of dig into what the Super League people, you know, Perez's mob are doing, that they've created loads of website domain names, on variations on a theme, which are actually quite revealing. I think European Super League wasn't going to be just their only Super League plans. I think they're planning for others elsewhere in the world as well. But yeah, the Danes have said, well, if you're going to try to use this phrase, we've already got it. We think that you're trying to pretend to be us. And therefore, we're looking for some form of compensation. Now, I don't know whether the Rugby League boys, who have also got Super League, have been monitoring this, because perhaps they could do the same. And anything which winds up Perez and Agnelli gets my hat firmly doffed in their direction.
Absolutely. I also like the fact that back in the day, the Danes, who you associate with kind of modesty and humility when trying to come up with a name for their first division, just went, Super League? That'll do.
Yes.
And also, I mean, Sky seems to think they own the word super as well for some bizarre reason. Anyway, that's enough news. The Dripping Pan, as Kieran well knows, is one of my favourite football ground names in the entire world. And the club called Lewis FC plays at the Dripping Pan, just down the road from Kieran. And we thought it'd been a while since we talked to somebody who was the chairman of a club way outside the big clubs, even outside League One and League Two. So Kieran went along to speak to Stuart Fuller, chairman of Lewis FC's men's team, about life in general at the moment. This episode of The Price of Football is brought to you by the AI-powered workspace Notion. What if you had access to tomorrow's tools today? In Notion, you do. It's the AI-powered workspace where any team can turn ideas into action.
My career is sort of a bit like being a butterfly, and I'm always jumping from project to project. So therefore, Notion helps me from summarizing meetings notes and automatically generating action items to getting answers to any question in seconds. If you can think it, you can make it. And Notion is for everyone, whether you're a Fortune 500 company or a freelance football finance lecturer.
You can try Notion for free when you go to notion.com/priceoffootball. That's all lowercase letters, notion.com/priceoffootball, and start turning ideas into action. That's notion.com/priceoffootball.
Hi, I'm Steve Lamack, and every week I'm joined by Music Allies Head of Insight, Stuart Dredge, on The Price of Music, the weekly podcast all about the money behind the music industry. In each episode, we discuss the very latest goings-on in the music business and dig into the finances behind the big stories.
So whether you're a music lover who just wants to know more about what really goes on in the industry, or you're an aspiring musician, manager or label owner who wants some inside knowledge on how Spotify's financial model really works, or what the future holds for independent live music venues, this is a show for you.
Subscribe to The Price of Music in your podcast app now. See you soon.
Hi, Stuart. Thanks so much for coming on the podcast. How are you keeping?
I'm good. Thanks you, Kieran. It's a lovely, wintry, wet day here in London. Beautiful.
So yeah, I understand you live in London. Historically, you're a West Ham fan, but you're involved at the top of Lewis FC. So how did that come about?
So I sort of fell out of love with West Ham round about the time that the Sullivan and Gold took over. And
an amazing coincidence, I'm
completely,
sure.
Completely. And whilst there were some good stuff going on the pitch, I used to take my eldest daughter, who's now 21, I used to take her to games. And I just didn't feel it was a nice place to be introducing somebody to football. And I've always traveled to watch football, so for 20 odd years I've been around the world watching games. And one of my friends who I met through doing something similar, Danny Last, suggested, hey, why don't you come down at this little club not far from me, called Lewis? You can have a beer, the football's terrible, but it's good laugh. So I went down, and this was the season that this was Lewis's pinnacle, on the men's side certainly, where they had one season in the what is now the National League, absolutely way out of their depth, were relegated in March. But it was great fun. I really enjoyed it. And the following season, you know, I went to more games as they dropped down to Step 2. But I was aware the club was in a little bit of financial peril, partly down to the global financial crisis, partly down to sort of previous management overspending significantly on budget. So there was a group of six guys that are called the Rooks 125. They took the club into community ownership back in 2010. And I thought this would be an interesting story to follow. So I followed them for a season, home and away, and I wrote a book about them and got so engrossed that that following year they had their first ever elections to the board as a community club. So I applied and was elected on the board. And that was October 2011. And I've been there ever since. I became chair of the club in 2015. Was in the job for a week before I fired my first manager, which was good fun. Well, no, not good fun. I'm still good friends with the one of the or the assistant manager who's actually managing in Step 2 now. But yeah, it's a roller coaster ride. It's opened my eyes as to how football is run, but still great fun.
Terrific. So you're presently in the Isthmian League. The men's team is fifth. The women's team is WSL2. Yeah, around about mid table. I think Lewis, it got a little bit of publicity recently for saying that the men's and the women's team are going to be paid the same because they're both playing for 90 minutes. How did that decision come about?
Well, I think it's one of the things that Lewis has done over the last 10 years is realize that you can't just be another football club. We compete not only on a Saturday with, you know, with Whitehall, with Eastbourne Borough, with Hastings, with Brighton. So we realized we had to be doing something different. You know, there's a marketing adage I've always used, which is get big, get niche, or get out. And you know, we're in a beautiful little town. Lewis is a fantastic, the county town of Sussex. But we compete on a Saturday at 3 o'clock or a Sunday at 2 o'clock with the cinema. You know, there's 5 minutes away. There's a fantastic cinema with restaurants, with shops, with the beach. So we had to do something different. So we decided that we were going to significantly invest in trying to get our women's team to play at the highest possible level. And one of the areas where we saw was, well, that's not going to be possible unless we're investing in the team. So sort of 2016, we started having these thoughts as a board, and we worked out the commercial models as to how we could do it, and we realised we could do it. And so we went in July 2017, and the concept is that both our men's and women's first team squads have the same playing budget. Now, that doesn't mean to say that they use the same budget, but both managers have exactly the same amount that they can spend every single week. And in that first season we introduced it, a lot of people said, well, you know, this is just a publicity stunt, this is a ploy. Our women were given a license to play in the Women's Championship. Possibly, I would say that we were the rank outsiders to be given that spot, but we did it. And the men were promoted. They actually topped the league, I think, for 35 of the 38 weeks of the season and only lost the title in the last week of the season, but still got promoted. So, a pretty successful move, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, brilliant. And yeah, it certainly, I think it is a step forward. And I can imagine other clubs will be looking on. I mean, in terms of the objectives, are the managers given broad targets or are you as a board have a broad target? Or is your focus so much on being effectively a community club that providing services in terms of health, education, and so on, is the forefront of your thoughts, and success on the pitch is desirable but not essential?
First and foremost, we want success on the pitch, and we want to be playing a brand of football that is attractive to watch and gets people coming back. We know we can't win every week, but we also know that if we have a team that is set up to play good football, and we've got a good pathway coming through, then we will attract fans. Now, our objectives this year, certainly for the men's side, is to finish in the top five, which is playoffs. And we haven't finished in the top five at step three for somewhere in the region of 15 years. For the women's team, you know, unfortunately, we're in a league where only one is promoted. So it makes it incredibly tough. And if you look at last season, Leicester City were promoted and had all but won the league by January.
Yeah.
So it's tough. This year, it's a little bit more open. And, you know, we're currently sitting in a good position. We had a disappointing defeat in the middle of November to the bottom team, Watford, which if we would have won, would have seen us up into second place. You know, the Super League is very much in our sights. We want to be playing at the highest possible level, which for the women is the Super League. And for the men, well, I think that's a difficult one to answer, because as you go up the leagues, you have to look at becoming professional. There's, you know, the Dripping Pan is a fantastic place to watch football, but it's not a place as it is at the moment where you could watch league football because of the rules around what is acceptable in terms of ground grading and ground facilities. But I still think that we would want to be, this year is the stepping stone, the first of many stepping stones, I hope, to be playing at higher levels.
Yep. Terrific. For the sake of honesty, you and I have met at the Dripping Pan a few weeks ago, and you were telling me about the club, and you know, I've been to Lewis on other occasions as well, because I live not too far away. And for anybody that's not been to non-league football, it is a completely different experience. You know, the fact that you spend half the time watching your football, and you can have a good chat with somebody, and you can have a pint and a pie whilst watching the game. So, you know, I'd certainly encourage people who think twice about it to give it a go. You said, you know, you're at the grassroots of football. Have you had time to take a look at the Tracy Crouch report into governance and the game? And do you think it will be beneficial to grassroots football if some of those recommendations go ahead?
Yes, I actually presented in front of the panel. I've known Tracy for a number of years. She's a very big non-league football fan. She was involved for quite a long time at Chatham Town, who are now at Step 5. And as we are a community club, we were asked by the FSA to take part in a session to the panel. And we spoke about a number of things. We spoke about look at equalising prize money for cup competitions. We looked at some of the rules and regulations around owners and directors tests. That was a big one for me. And also about that wider community ownership for football, which we get the fact it's not a model that will work for everybody. But having more fans involved in the administration and the running of our game, I think, is essential for the future. So that was something we really, really tried to drive home. And also about, you know, levels of community engagement and encouragement to the government to look at the way in which football is funded, so that there is more funds that can come down to improve facilities. You know, I'll give you a really good example, Kieran. We don't own our ground. Our ground is owned by the council, and they rent it to us, and we have a fantastic relationship with the council. The car park just outside the ground has an issue when it rains a lot. And what happens is the car park floods, and the water, as you remember, the Dripping Pan is below ground level.
Yes.
It flows into the ground, and it pools in one place. So if we were supposed to have had a game last night, we wouldn't have been able to play it because of the rain down in the south yesterday, and it flooded part of the pitch. Now, we would love to have proper drainage put in that can solve that problem. But if we look at the, you know, in the context of how important is that for us? Well, we haven't had a game called off in, you know, 2 years because of the water. It's a very rare occasion. But to have the funding to come down from higher in the football pyramid to improve that, which makes the pitch better, would be fantastic. And I think that we're not unique. A lot of clubs at our level have these projects that they just can't fund. But if they could fund them, it would make the club a better place for the local community, which then means that they can generate more revenue themselves, which then means they can start improving some of the other facilities as well.
Yep. Yeah. So it's a virtuous circle. Hmm. To me, Stuart, that doesn't sound particularly Maoist or like North Korea. whereas, according to chief executives of Premier League clubs, that's what you're suggesting. So you're a secret communist, and you didn't even know it. I'm thoroughly in agreement. Having community clubs at the heart of the local town or village or whatever it's going to be makes a huge difference. And many people who are now in the professional game started off at non-league or were released by academies, went into non-league and then bounced back. So they do serve this absolutely essential purpose. Just moving away from Lewis as a football club, in your day job, you're involved in piracy, or rather stopping piracy in relation to corporate entities, including football clubs. Could you just explain a bit more about that?
Yeah, sure. So I work for an organisation called OPSEC Security. And OPSEC are involved in protecting brands online. So whether that is protecting a brand's physical merchandise from being counterfeited, whether that is stopping fraud and phishing attempts, and also working with rights holders to, I'd love to say eliminate, but it's, you know, you're constantly against the odds, reducing pirated content online. And that could be written things. So it could be, you know, university papers and theses, or it could be streaming of football matches or rugby matches or cricket. All of these things, they damage revenues, they damage reputation. There is a link between this activity to organized crime. So it's a big thing, but in terms of anti-piracy, yeah, it's a tough one, because if you compare, say, for example, anti-counterfeit, someone makes a fake football shirt, actually you have a little bit of time to try and find those fake football shirts and then trace them back to factories that are making them. With pirated content, especially with regard to streaming, it's in the now. It's, you know... Yeah. If you find it in an hour and you ask a social media network to take it down in another hour, it's irrelevant. The game or the event is finished. So it is a constantly moving challenge, and one that there is a lot of technology that goes into the rights holders and the platforms they're producing, but also in terms of the analysis and the intelligence behind trying to find the source of these streams or this pirated content.
Right. It sounds pretty concrete, because I'll be honest, like most blokes of my age, I'm in a variety of WhatsApp groups, and it could be that on some of them at 3 o'clock on a Saturday afternoon, people might say, where are you watching the match this afternoon, you know, which stream? Yeah. and that has become part of modern culture, and it must be quite a battle to try to overcome.
Yes, it is. And what's really interesting is there's this wider argument that you try and think about in terms of the blackout period. Let's take football. So Saturday, the blackout period's in place.
Yeah.
And the blackout period is in place, and it's been in place since 1962, I think, to protect the smaller clubs from everyone going to the pub and watching a game rather than going to the stadium down the road.
Yep.
And I sort of get that. But what's happened now is there's so many ways in which you can watch a game that it doesn't matter what time the kickoff is. You know, the blackout period actually, it in some ways, it harms clubs rather than hinders them still. And, you know, our situation at Lewis, for instance, is we're still covered by the blackout period. We can't show our game. And would it impact our fans? You know, we had 860, I think, on Saturday. If we were showing that, streaming that live, would that have an impact? Probably not. But on the counter side, if we were streaming it, potentially someone could pick up that stream and then share it, and then all of a sudden you have an issue with the rights protection. So it is it's an interesting argument, but certainly one that the broadcasters at the moment are trying just to focus down on stopping the core people sharing these illegal streams.
Right. Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, it is a double-edged sword. I've always likened it a bit to Glastonbury. You know, I've always got the choice of watching Glastonbury on my television on BBC Two or streamed on the BBC each summer, or I could go. And that's the same for everybody else. But Glastonbury sells out within 5 minutes every single year. You know, if the product is good and it's a unique experience, you want to experience it live. So I'm never convinced about the 3 p.m. blackout argument. I guess it would be more difficult for you. Let's say, you know, it's, you know, we're in December, it's pouring down outside, and if the blackout is removed and Sky are showing, you know, Manchester United versus Chelsea at 3 o'clock on a Saturday, some of your fans are going to think, I'm going to sack off going to Lewis, and I will. But I think those tend to be the more peripheral fans. You know, if you're a Lewis fan, you're a Lewis fan, and you go and watch the match. As a Brighton fan, you know, if there's a chance for me to watch my team, I always take up that option. And quite often, you know, given the nature of supporting a club which is in a division which a lot of matches taking place at weird and wonderful times, and there are alternatives being broadcast live, I wouldn't think twice about it. So it's a genuine tough one, and I know that the Premier League clubs are keen to ring fence 3 p.m. Saturdays for direct to consumer broadcasts rather than to go through the Premier League mechanisms itself. So yeah, genuine challenge. Now, I also believe, Stuart, that you are friends with a hero of mine, the Swiss Ramble. Is this true?
Yes, I've known the other Kieran for a number of years, probably going back, I don't know, 12 or 13 years, and have been out for beers with him when I've been in work for in Switzerland. And actually, I think it was this summer was the 10th anniversary of our infamous trip to watch Young Boys play West Ham in the Urien Cup competition, which was in this absolutely tiny little village in the middle of nowhere in Switzerland. Grenchin, I think it was called. And it was a 4-team tournament. And it was quite amusing because we'd gone there and it was quite sleepy. There were a lot of West Ham fans, maybe like 500 fans went. And then it was Allardyce's first game in charge, and West Ham lost. I remember that. But I remember the walk back to the station through this picturesque, tiny little village in the middle of the mountains. And just coming the other way were the two other team's fans who were playing in the next game, which happened to be Hertha Berlin and Basel. And there must have been about 10,000 fans coming the other way. So we just ducked into this little bar and pretended, you know, that we weren't there. But yeah, he's a good lad. I enjoyed it. I haven't seen him for a few years because work meant that I no longer go to Switzerland anymore. But yeah, he's a good lad.
Right, right, okay. Well, I've been trying for 2 years to get him to come on the show, but he prefers to be shy and retiring. But I'll never give up. Never give up. He's you know, as far as I'm concerned, he's the Dr. Evil to my mini me in the world of football finance. And if it wasn't for him, I certainly wouldn't have got involved to the extent I have. So he's my absolute hero. Brilliant. Thank you so much, Stuart. If people want to find you on social media or get hold of you to talk anything about Lewis or piracy or otherwise, what's the best way to find you?
So Twitter, I am The Ball Is Round. As the same on Instagram as well. And then just Stuart Fuller on LinkedIn. So if you want things about anti-piracy and anti-counterfeiting, then there's also The Web Is Round. That's the other one. That's the non-football one. And the football and sport one is The Ball Is Round.
Okay, that will absolutely delight Kevin, because we've had this argument in the past few shows that the ball can be egg-shaped according to the Oxford English Dictionary. and to say that Kevin's bottom lip was out when I read that out to him is somewhat of an understatement.
Brilliant.
Thanks very much, Stuart. Take care. And I'll be down the dripping pan soon.
Great. Thanks, Kieran.
Kieran, Lewis are a great example. I know we joke about, you know, Sussex being hipster central, etc., but Lewis, I believe, the first team, possibly in the world, certainly in this country, to pay their women's players the same amount of money as the men's players. Absolutely right. But it's also really interesting to hear, as I said in the intro to the whole pod, the views of somebody at grassroots level about the Tracy Crouch fan-led review. We've heard a lot of noise from Premier League chairman, so it's really interesting to hear from somebody who made a deliberate decision to cut himself off from Premier League football as a West Ham fan and start enjoying himself at the level of Lewis FC.
Yes, and it was good to have a chat with Stuart. I've been to the Dripping Pan myself. It's a different experience to watching Premier League football, but different doesn't mean worse. And you know, you have a great time. It would be fantastic if the contribution that the clubs at this level make to their local towns, to the local communities, was taken into consideration. Nobody's trying to stop Manchester United, Liverpool, and Chelsea from being successful. It's just tilting the balance a little bit more in towards those people who are doing good 7 days a week, 52 weeks a year.
Mm. Yes, absolutely. And Lewis first came to my attention was Patrick Marber, who's a friend of mine, now a playwright, was a very funny comedian, was part of the fan-led consortium that first saved them. And right back then, you know, part of the whole concept was that we will, you know, this club will be different in attitude to a lot of other football clubs. And it's refreshing that that's happened. And they've actually, seen those promises through, haven't they?
Yeah, because, I mean, as Stuart said, in order to survive, you've either got to be bigger or you've got to be niche. And yeah, Lewis are niche. There's no doubt about it. And there's also, for anybody that ever fancied, it is a very, very quaint town, and it's more Brighton than Brighton in terms of hipsterdom. It's got a fantastic brewery. I'd recommend the place for anybody who just wants to have a different experience.
Well, I mean, it's a good recommendation, Kieran. TripAdvisor, no, please note. But except, of course, you've put off every single Palace fan from going there by saying it's more Brighton than Brighton. There's nothing you could have said. If you could have said it's like a non-Brighton version of Brighton, there'd be 3,000 Palace fans going down in the next couple of weeks. Thank you for listening, everybody. Apologies for the throat issues and a couple of sound issues early on, which were mainly my throat issues. If you'd like to make a small monthly contribution to the pod, please go to patreon.com/priceoffootball. And of course, if you have a question you'd like answered on the show, on our Monday questions pod, email us at questions@priceoffootball.com. And in the meantime, I shall hand you over to Mr. Kieran Maguire for his customary farewell. And I'm looking forward to seeing which language he delivers it in.
I'll use the Queen's. for this one. Once again, folks, thanks for all your support. Thanks for your messages. We do appreciate that you take the time to keep in contact with us. If you want to support the show just by giving us some good karma, all you need to do is to go along to your app on which you listen to the show and give us a review, give us 5 stars. That helps us in the charts. That helps producer Guy when he's trying to talk to the guests and persuade them to have a chat with two old geezers. It doesn't matter what you say in the review. If you say, if you can give us 5 stars, that'd be grand. You could say it was you'd rather have the show hosted by Dame Tanigree Thompson and David Watts from the song David Watts.
Can we have people from songs?
Oh, I hope so. I'm going to see From the Jam next week, so I'm looking forward to see it, hearing all those songs again. And David Watts is just such a wonderful song.
It is a fantastic song. There's no doubt about that. All right, love. Thanks, love. Well, I didn't say it's like saying goodbye to the postman. All right, thanks, mate. Merry Christmas. Lovely to talk to you as always, Kieran, and lovely to have all you people listening to us. I think we're in a situation, Kieran, where we can announce that we are having a Christmas quiz.
Yes, we are. It is taking place on Tuesday, the 21st of December, which will be just in time for anybody that wins the prize. It's not that we've got any prizes at present, just in time for them to miss the Christmas post.
Yeah. Now, speaking of which, I should send out the prizes for the people who won the last quiz before we do the next quiz. There will be more details to come, and we look forward to your company. It's something we always love doing, and so we look forward to that very much, and we can all celebrate Christmas together. In the meantime, bye, everybody.
Bye.
The price of football. Price of football.